Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt basketball coach, to join us coming up at high noon. Chris Mason, his weekly chat with us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, so that'll be the fourth and final hour. Don't forget, this Friday, which is May 22nd, that is going to be the three-year anniversary of the Predators punching their ticket into the Stanley Cup Final. And what does that mean? We have got Game 6 Remastered, where we chronicle the Predators' historic 2017 Western Conference title and their win against the Anaheim Ducks. Pete Weber will have some of the biggest moments. He's going to be kind of narrating this thing. The three of us spoke with a lot of people within the organization, whether it was General Manager David Poyle or President and CEO Sean Henry, and we did interviews with a lot of the players to kind of relive that series, that playoff run, and eliminating the Ducks in Game 6 here in Nashville. We are going to unveil that on the three-year anniversary this Friday. It'll be on our show. So the final 2 hours of our show will be Game 6 Remastered. So we'd love for you to make sure you tune in, kind of block out your schedule for noon to 2, or actually you can multitask. You can work and listen to this. It's going to be really, really cool, and I can't wait to hear the final product. Can't wait to also talk to Kenny Albert, our next guest. Always good conversations with him. Kenny, how you doing?
I'm great, guys. How are you? It certainly brings back a lot of memories when I think back to the 2017 playoff run. Hard to believe it's already been 3 years, but I was there for a number of those games, including the entire series against the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, we obviously spoke with you many times throughout that journey, whether it was Chicago, St. Louis, Anaheim, and then eventually Pittsburgh. But it was quite a run, and we all remember the atmosphere, and you're going to get all of that. Ryan Johansson is going to kind of take us through. Remember, he got hurt in Game 4 and didn't play the rest of the series, and he's going to talk about that moment and what it meant and what he did watching Game 6. So we'll get into all of that on Friday. It's going to be fantastic. For a guy that's done so many sports play-by-play, The Last Dance has gotten huge ratings. It just wrapped up this past Sunday. And for people like us doing sports talk radio 4 hours a day, 5 days a week with no live sports, obviously it's received a lot of attention around the country. What do you remember about that Bulls dynasty?
Well, I really enjoyed watching The Last Dance, all 10 episodes over the last 5 Sunday nights. And I was in my 20s at the time and was living down in Maryland, Washington, D.C. area from 90 to 95 during the first 3 Bulls championships, and did have the chance to see some of their games. I did work 1 Bulls game, I remember. I was doing hockey, Capitals home games on television, but I filled in on some Washington Bullet games. So I did actually have the opportunity to work as a play-by-play broadcaster 1 game that Michael Jordan played in Washington. And then I also remember later in his career, and this was not covered in The Last Dance. It ended with his retirement from the Bulls. But I do remember going to see him play in New York with the Washington Wizards when he made his comeback in the early 2000s, but it brought back so many memories of those playoff runs against the Pistons and the Pacers and the Knicks as a sports fan in his 20s at the time. Like I said, certainly watched all those games. Also had the opportunity back in 92. It was sort of my last behind the scenes role before I started the job in Washington with the Capitals. I was working for NBC as a statistician and researcher in Barcelona during the 92 Olympics. So I actually had a front row seat to all the games played by the Dream Team. And I actually pulled out a photo album. We had real cameras back then, no cell phones. So I had pictures developed and I have them all in an album. Most of them are a little blurry. The quality wasn't too great, but I actually found one picture that I took of all 3 in the shot during warmups: Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird. Prior to one of their games in Barcelona back in 92.
Wow. That's really cool. I mean, when you were in the moment, it's one thing to now step back, but when you were in the moment, Kenny, what were you thinking looking at that team? I mean, that's the best team we've ever seen assembled. I mean, it was just – what was it like, though, being in the moment watching that team?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely the greatest basketball team ever assembled, 11 NBA superstars. And then Christian Laettner was the one collegiate player who was added to the roster. And, you know, what I remember, even with a media credential, the Olympics in general are a lot different animal than when we cover events back home, such as NHL games, NFL, NBA, where we have so much access as media members to the players, the locker room prior to the game or in the morning after the game. You could go down to the court or the field, for example, prior to a baseball game or a football game. At the Olympics, even back then, you're kept at a distance. Even if you're working, you can't get anywhere near the players. There's no locker room access. So I do remember, you know, while I did sit courtside for the games, other than that, you weren't anywhere near the members of the Dream Team, and they had so much security around them. And I remember back then hearing stories about some of them who would be spotted out around Barcelona. I think I actually did walk past John Stockton and his family one day in Barcelona when they were out shopping or heading to a restaurant. But they sort of had this mystical feel to them. They were larger than life. And I also found a photo that I took at a press conference, which I had forgotten about. I was about 15 or 20 rows deep in a huge press setting, but all of the players were there wearing their jerseys prior to the first game. They were all up on the podium, and a lot of fun just to look back and think about those memories from nearly 30 years ago.
Wow, that's fantastic. We had Stanford Steve on yesterday, who's involved with Scott Van Pelt on the late night Sports Center. We had him on the show yesterday, and we were, because he does a lot of stuff when it comes to the gambling, and of course they have their Bad Beats segment that we enjoy on this show. I think it's hilarious, but you know, we were just kind of talking to him. It's interesting tying this all together, what we started with. You remember the atmosphere in Bridgestone Arena, and actually he brought it up yesterday, and we were talking with him about that. I mean, it was a real home ice advantage, so to speak. I mean, it was what everybody was talking about, the atmosphere in Nashville and the atmosphere inside Bridgestone Arena with the fans and how loud and crazy it was. Have you thought about when we come back? You know, there's so much that goes into the, you know, he was just talking about the gambling. You know, they adjust lines because of home court or home ice, or being the home team has been very good at home. If they come back and there's not any fans, how different that will be for that element. What about for your element? Have you thought about calling games with no fans, no atmosphere in the arena?
Well, first of all, when I think back to that 17 playoff run, it was tremendous. Not only the atmosphere and the volume inside Bridgestone Arena, but out on Broadway with thousands and thousands of fans celebrating and congregating and watching on the big screens. And I've had the good fortune of working the West Final in the NHL since 2014, but in particular the last 3 years in Nashville in 2017 and then in Vegas in 2018. It was a similar atmosphere as far as the volume in the arena and the fans outside the arena. They don't have a setting like Broadway right outside T-Mobile Arena in Vegas, but they did have thousands of fans during their series against Washington outside as well. And then in St. Louis last year, it was a great atmosphere. They won their first Stanley Cup. So those three runs in the West did have a lot of similarities, although I'm not sure anything could ever match Nashville, both inside and outside the arena during that run. As far as what we're going to experience when sports comes back, whatever that is, you know, will we be calling games with no fans at the beginning? It certainly sounds like a good possibility. I know the NHL... you know, there have been so many scenarios thrown out in the media as to what might happen, when, and how, you know, all yet to be determined. Same thing with the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball. But I would guess there's a good chance that we may even be calling games out of a studio, at least at the start. Obviously, nothing matches being there and calling the game with a sold-out crowd and all of the crowd noise around you. But, you know, hopefully it's not too long of a period, if that's the case, if we do have to call games out of a studio, because it does have the feeling like you're in a phone booth and you obviously can't see as well off a TV monitor as if the entire ice surface is in front of you. So a lot of questions still out there. you know, the main thing at this point is hopefully everybody's health is great and we all stay safe and the listeners as well. I send my best to your entire listening area, of course, but we'll see what happens. I know the fans around North America can't wait for sports to come back. We did have golf and NASCAR and soccer over the weekend to watch on television. So a lot of questions out there. I'll leave it up to people in a much higher pay grade than us, the doctors and the scientists. So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
We're talking to Kenny Albert, and of course, a fantastic announcer across the spectrum. A lot of you have seen him do a lot of Predator games over the years, as we've been talking about, but you've also seen him doing NFL games and Major League Baseball games. And Kenny, of course, you're traveling all over the place. I think I travel a lot, but you're doing multitasking during a lot of stages, even of the hockey season. And so what's this been like to slow life down? This is a different lifestyle for you, probably unlike anything you've seen in years in your career. You're hanging with your family. So how have you tried to take advantage of that time?
Yeah, absolutely. It was surreal and bizarre at the start. This is day 70 at home. I'm sure it's the same for you guys. and you have a four-hour show to do every day. I don't. But have been doing a lot of interviews and podcasts similar to this one. I returned home on Thursday, March 12th. I worked the New York Rangers-Colorado Avalanche game in Denver on the night of March 11th, and that's when the Rudy Gobert news came out and the NBA wound up postponing. And the next morning, the Rangers were scheduled to fly to Arizona for a game 2 days later against the Coyotes, and that's when the NHL announced the pause in their season. So Thursday night, March 12th, was dinner number one, and tonight will be dinner number 70 here at home, family. But, you know, I think for a lot of us, one real positive has been spending family time that we never usually get to do. And in my case, I've never been with my family for 70 consecutive days. I can assure you of that with the crazy schedule and flying around the country, you know, in particular during certain times of the year when it's real busy. I am home a lot in the summer, but do have work on weekends during normal times. So that aspect of it has been a positive for sure. You know, like I said, I've tried to keep busy doing a bunch of interviews, some Zoom sessions with college broadcast students, watching a lot of television, more so than during normal times when we're all so hectic and crazy. Like I said, enjoy The Last Dance. I've been watching some other shows, some old games that have been broadcasted. A lot of reading and a lot more exercising, to be honest, than usual. We have such hectic lives that you don't often have the chance to do as much as you'd like. I just got back from an hour-long walk, which I try to do every day. We have a Peloton bike here. So I think the family time and the exercise have probably been the two biggest positives to come out of this time period.
We've referenced the Last Dance a couple of times, and you can't watch it without really enjoying some famous calls from your dad, Marv Albert. And I grew up in New York for a time. I can remember your uncles calling games for various teams in the area as well. So you grew up with announcing all around you. And you're not the only son of famous announcers who's gone on to have a great career of your own. But I'm curious, growing up, as you developed your skills, how did you take advantage of your family and their announcing pedigree? And where, how did you try to work around the strategy of people saying, well, here's Kenny Albert. Of course, he's going to get some opportunities here because of his dad, et cetera. And so how did you try to separate yourself from that and pave your own way?
Well, it was a tremendous childhood. When I think back, it was so much fun. I never knew anything different right from my first memories, the 3, 4, 5 years old. My father was a broadcaster. He did the radio at the time for the Knicks and the Rangers and also was the local sportscaster on WNBC Channel 4. He would do the local sports at 6 and 11 every night. So I did not know anything other than that. I had friends whose fathers had regular 9-to-5 jobs, and mine was away a lot on the weekends, wasn't home very often for dinner, but it was 99.9% positive. I would go to so many games at Madison Square Garden with him, to the Channel 4 studios. I would tag along on road trips once I was old enough, and got a tape recorder for my birthday when I was 5 or 6 for my parents, and from that point on, I knew I wanted to do play-by-play. I was never forced to. I was never told, you have to get into this. It was totally my choosing, and would start bringing the tape recorder to games when I was old enough. And big break in high school when a local cable station came to my school to film a girls' basketball game, and They were not planning on using announcers, just natural sound, and I volunteered, and from that point on, did about 100 games over the next 3 years, and I felt like I had such a head start on any other kids my age at that time who wanted to do this, because you really didn't have the opportunity until college back in the early to mid-1980s. So I think that was a huge part of it as well, just the good fortune of that cable station coming to my high school at that time. But with my father and my uncles, Al and Steve, who were involved in broadcasting for over four decades now, they both did a lot of basketball, hockey, boxing, some other sports as well. I joke that when they would come over on birthdays and holidays back when I was a kid, it was like the first all-sports radio station. They would sit around the table telling stories, and I would try to soak it in via osmosis. But to get back to your original question, I wound up in Baltimore, and I've told the story with you guys. Barry Trotz and I were together for 2 years with the Baltimore Skipjacks of the American Hockey League. We were roommates on the road, and remains a good friend to this day, one of the best people I've ever met during my professional career. But started out in Baltimore and then worked 3 years in Washington with Home Team Sports and the Capitals. And I felt like those 5 years really went a long way as far as trying to establish my own identity outside of New York. And obviously there were some doors open, and I was able to meet some connections due to my family and the three sportscasters that I grew up around. But those 5 years were so vital as far as just developing a style and creating my own identity when I lived down in the D.C. area.
You've got an interesting perspective on what we're all going through right now, just being in the New York area, because New York has been hit as hard as any place, really around the world. You know, they've had some serious challenges here. So what's that been like for you to watch every day as the city goes through this and tries to come out the other side?
You know, to be honest, I'm probably taking it all in on television, just like you guys are, as far as New York City goes, because I'm not that far. I'm about 15 miles outside Manhattan in the suburbs in New Jersey. And we're all staying in, you know, the four of us, my wife and two daughters. We haven't really been around a lot of people. We have seen some friends outdoors while social distancing and staying, 10 to 20 feet away. But we really haven't gone anywhere. I did go into Manhattan twice to drop off groceries for my mother, who lives in an apartment building. And I didn't get out of the car. She was on the sidewalk. I rolled down the window. So my only three, I guess, excursions into Manhattan were for that purpose. And what amazed me was the lack of cars on the road. You know, normally it would take 40 or 45 minutes to get into where she lives in traffic over the George Washington Bridge and then down the West Side Highway. All three times I went in, round trip, 1 hour, 30 minutes in, 30 minutes out, and that was it. And it was almost like I was watching a movie while I was driving on the streets in Manhattan, because there were barely any cars. And then the few people you saw walking were wearing masks, obviously for good reason, but certainly far from the norm. There's a town about 20 minutes from where I live in New Jersey, Teaneck, where there was a big, at the start back in March, a large number of people in that community were hit with the virus. But fortunately, up where I am, again, don't see too many people. When I go out for my walks, definitely maintain a distance. And again, we'll just hope that everything the doctors and scientists are working on can lead us all back to a normal life in the very near future. But although I live in the New York area, most of what I'm seeing is the same as you guys on television as well.
We're talking to Kenny Albert here with us on Darren Donick and Chase, and getting back to the play-by-play and what you do with your career. I mean, you're one of the rare guys that you do all four of the big four, and I think that's unique and something that sets you apart from others. But how difficult is it when you're going from doing a hockey game one night to baseball to the NFL to basketball and trying to prep for each of those, whatever assignment that you have? Is it difficult, or is it something that at this point in your career you're just used to?
Probably the latter. Used to it at this point. I love the variety, and there are certain times a year during normal times. Now we might have a collision of every sport once everything does come back. But in October, the last couple of years, I've had stretches of four different sports in about 9 or 10 days. NFL regular season game on a Sunday, baseball playoffs during the week, hockey regular season, and then an NBA preseason game. So those are a lot of fun. You really have to be organized and get the work done in advance. And for whatever reason, I seem to kind of thrive as far as the work during those situations. You just somehow get it done. You run on adrenaline. But again, you know, my goal growing up, I wanted to do hockey on the radio. I was a huge hockey fan. I played club hockey in high school and college. Wasn't very good. I was probably a third line winger who didn't score many goals. My hockey prowess certainly nowhere near Willie on the baseball and field and basketball court, I could tell you that. But that was it. Wanted to do hockey on the radio, and that was my first job with Barry Trotz in Baltimore. And things sort of developed from there. When I worked in Washington, started to fill in on some basketball and baseball games, and then a huge break for a number of us who were still at Fox came in late 93 when Rupert Murdoch stole the NFC football rights away from CBS, who had done NFC games for 38 years. And Fox came in and made a huge offer and decided to go with a couple of veteran crews, Hall of Famers like Pat Summerall and John Madden, Dick Stockton and Matt Millen on the second crew. And then they hired four, you know, at that point, somewhat unproven play-by-play broadcasters. And I'm proud to say that myself, Joe Buck, and Tom Brenneman are still at Fox 26 years later, and Kevin Harlan has had a great run at CBS and Turner after leaving Fox. So they took a chance back then. They took a huge chance on some young announcers, and that was probably the biggest break of all of our careers.
Well, and it's also unique. You mentioned your longstanding relationship with Fox and what you do with them. You did hockey for Fox, and then NBC gets the contract, and so you're also able to do games with NBC. So how unique of a situation is that, that you get to work for two networks?
Yeah, Fox is great about that. You know, there are some others. Bill Raftery, for example, does college basketball for both CBS and Fox. There are a number of other announcers that work for multiple networks, and that's changed. You know, that you didn't really see that happen prior to about 10 or 15 years ago, but things have loosened up a bit for whatever reason. But it really started, the NBC relationship started in 2002 when the Winter Olympics were going to be held in Salt Lake City. And about a week to 10 days before, in late January, I received a phone call out of the blue asking if I would be A, available, and B, interested to work some men's and women's hockey for NBC in Salt Lake. Doc Emmerich, the great Doc Emmerich, and Gary Thorne were scheduled to be the announcers. And Doc had an issue. His dog had a very bad illness at the time. And Doc and his wife own numerous dogs and horses. They're animal lovers and do a terrific job with their animals, training their animals. And Doc did not want to leave his wife home for 2.5 weeks with the sick dog. So I was the beneficiary, and at the last minute got to call Olympic hockey on NBC in 2002, which led to subsequently four more Winter Olympics in 06, 10, 14, and 18, as well as a chance to start doing hockey with NBC around 2010 or 11. So ironically, it all started due to Doc's dog getting sick. And like I said, Fox is great about it. Working for Fox, MSG, and NBC, they all are terrific about the jigsaw puzzle of the schedule that I have throughout the year, and very fortunate to be involved with all three networks for such a long period of time.
Wow, that's quite the story. So I know this is probably like asking, you know, pick your favorite kid, but do you have is hockey your favorite sport that you get to do play by play for, or is it one of the others?
That is the exact line that I use whenever I'm asked. I say that it's like asking which kid is your favorite if you have four kids. You know, sometimes it depends on talking to who's asking the question. But, I mean, as a kid, hockey was my favorite, for sure. Played hockey, loved hockey. That's all I ever wanted to do. And, you know, I would say hockey and football, it's like apples and oranges. It's really hard to differentiate because every NFL game is so big. Each team plays one game a week. I've done playoff games where there are 40 million people watching on television. So there's such an adrenaline rush as well, you know, at 1 o'clock on a Sunday when they kick off in an NFL game. And I really enjoy doing basketball and baseball as well. Don't do as many games in those sports as I do in the other two, hockey and football. So, you know, again, just lucky to be involved in all of them. There's really nothing like the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, an overtime game late in the series or in a game seven. But also have great memories of calling some NFL playoff games and college football bowl games as well.
Leave us with this, Kenny. If you could pick the next documentary, what would you want to see? You don't have to do it, but you just get to pick the subject.
Wow, that's a great question. You know, we all have spent the last five Sundays watching The Last Dance. I saw there's been talk. I guess LeBron James' production company is thinking about doing a documentary on the Houston Astros situation over the last 3 years. So that would certainly be an interesting one to watch. You know, in hockey, there was a great documentary done on the Edmonton Oilers. It was called The Boys on the Bus back in the 80s. So I've already seen that. It took you behind the scenes. They had cameras following their team around, similar to what the Chicago Bulls went through during the 98 season. So I'd probably have to think about it. But, you know, for sure the Astros would be an intriguing story for most of us who have a lot of time on our hands to watch television these days.
No doubt about it. Hey, thanks for the visit. As always, you continue to be safe, and certainly we'll talk to you down the road.
You too, guys. Always great chatting. Feel free to get in touch anytime. And to you guys and all the listeners, stay safe. And hopefully we're back to talking about actual games and all of the sports that we love real soon.
Fingers crossed. Thank you, Kenny Albert. Appreciate the conversation with him. And he gets it done. Play-by-play man, as you just heard, the Big Four. He does it all. And we appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.